Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 339 of the Roguecast, recorded July 7th, 2021. Noel Blinderman and his American Gods. I don't have any clever witticisms to begin this podcast. It's July. It's not as hot as I would like it to be. It's raining.
It's alternately sunny, then raining, then sunny, then raining, then gloomy, then sunny, then raining, then gloomy.
It's like Thor is having a panic attack.
I personally quasi like it.
I just hate the humidity and wish that would go away.
Yeah.
I would be okay with a dry heat.
Me too. 108 degrees, it's perfect.
God, no. 108 is just... Go live in Arizona, or no, you know is, the Pacific
actually,
Northwest.
That
now.
Is actually suffering. That is beyond summer for every and for me. That is. I am happy with a good, I don't know, 89, 92.
That's, we don't want tires melting when people drive.
I have
35 will become even more backed up.
At least visited Arizona once or twice. I feel like I could live there. I feel like I kind of like it.
It's a dry heat. It's like 114 degrees. Why would you want to live there?
It's rough. I like to.
Although
test
isn't that where Dan lives?
I like to. Yeah, I like to test my might.
Oh. Yeah, that's Dave. You're thinking of the island of Mortal Kombat.
So are
what's
you
that island called?
Mortal Kombat?
Is that an island? Is that a name for the island of Mortal Kombat?
I have no idea.
Combatica.
I was just gonna say. you're one of those people who, when the waiter or waitress brings out the food on a very hot plate and tells you not to touch it, you touch it, don't you?
I literally did that the other day.
I think we all do it instinctively. Like, well, oh no, we want to touch.
You want to know, like. Is it really hot, or do you just think I'm a wuss?
Yeah, you want to show the waiter or waitress that you are strong enough that you can push the little thing.
That is how the Kung Fu masters, they used to carry these hot iron kettles to learn to gird their strength, right? Isn't that a thing?
I think they would have it brought with hot pads to their apprentices and tell them it was too hot, and they would make them do little tests of it. Oh, too hot.
How very pime of you.
I'm just trying to say that me touching the skillet at Chili's is very much akin to a Kung Fu monk getting ready for battle.
It is, you are mighty in that sense.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, that's entirely.
I was at Jack Allen's and with my sister, and we were trying like a sort of spicy crab dip appetizer thing.
Yes.
Very good. Yes. Super good.
As is most things.
But they brought it out. It's in a skillet, and they did not do the customary "don't touch that; it's very hot." Now I knew it was hot. It had that they don't bring it out in a skillet if it's not hot. But I was like, how hot? So I gave it like a little test tap. It wasn't like I would like put my hand to it like the Nazi dude in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Well, you don't want an imitation of a skillet in your hand. That's just
kind of not as cool as having the headpiece of the Staff of Rock.
Right.
I mean, not useful either.
Anyway, it was pretty hot.
On a sliding scale, the headpiece of the Staff of Ra, that's kind of at the top. That's the pinnacle of the cool
thing.
That's
true.
Yeah.
Then you have the Joe Pesci Home Alone. Door handle.
Yep. Sure.
I don't know what the bottom of the totem pole. Maybe the skillet thing is the bottom.
No, the bottom of the totem pole, Nick, is the reverse. It's the pole in the Christmas Story that you put your tongue to. That's the cold. that's the scale.
Ah, I understand.
Yeah.
Are we done with this bit?
No. I got nothing. That's we just. I. This is what happens when you intro with no plan.
The Rogues Gallery improv team is done.
Worth mentioning, we do still have, I think, like four or five spots left on the Forgotten Realms pre-release.
But it is moving
it is
quickly.
Filling up, and that is going to be Friday, July 16th, which is a week from Friday.
Yep.
They have been promoting the cards online.
They look so cool. So the big one is that they did ones for both Minsk and Boo.
Yeah. Boo is not a card.
Oh.
Boo is a token that you get. So when you play,
nerd.
Look. I am not going to let all this Magic Arena time go to waste. I know a thing. Jim Zub, who's the guy who's been writing the Minsk comics, posted it. Basically, Minsk is a character you put out, and when you put him out, you also get a token for Boo.
Yep.
And if you know Magic at all, Boo has haste, which means that when Minsk comes into play, he can't attack right away, but Boo can.
Oh, nice.
So Minsk comes into play,
he launches
Boo. He's like, he's go for the eyes, Boo, which is actually on Boo's token card.
And the off chance that this has all sounded Greek to you, not the magic part, but just who these characters are, highly recommend, I guess, playing Baldur's Gate from like 30 years ago. Sure. Or 20 years, whatever it was.
It's on the iPad, right?
It's on, yeah, it's all over the place now. I'm sure there's apps and new versions and fancy versions. But also the D&D comic omnibus that they put out recently of Jim Zub's stuff, which has the supporting characters, Minsk and his little hamster, Boo.
You mean his giant miniature space hamster?
I'm trying to only hit him with the enough, not too much at a time, Randy.
If they're not sold by a giant miniature space hamster.
No, that sounds stupid. But in fact, he's cool.
No.
But
awesome.
He's a slightly deranged ranger, and who has a pet hamster, which may or may not, depending on whether you believe him or not, be a miniaturized version of the giant space hamsters from Spelljammer.
Spelljammer of all things, which hasn't been continuity for what, 30 years?
Like, yeah, and yet this character has become an iconic character.
He's come through 3 different editions, I think.
Yeah. But so he's featured in there. I just saw some art from a green dragon the other day, mm-hmm. and he's like flying down over like a forest and like exhaling the poisonous gas that is their attack, and then like it's billowing through the leaves and stuff. It looks super cool. One of the coolest paintings I've ever seen of a green dragon.
Looks like all the dragons have cards. There's a Tiamat card that when you play it, you get to play all the dragons in your deck. There's a Lolth card.
Oh, nice.
There's a
Drizdord
and Brunor Battlehammer.
Oh, nice. While I was having lunch, I saw one that was a female moon elf, and yeah. I was trying to remember if that was from one of the comics too. Because
Jim Zub's, isn't it?
Yeah, I was thinking
his characters also made their way in. Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome for him. Yeah. I bet.
I wonder if it's probably because they're fourth edition, like the Fells Five, the ones that just had the they won't make it in.
Do you remember any of their names?
No. One of them was named
Fel. Wasn't it
Valros?
No, that's Pathfinder.
Get out, Nick. You disgraced it.
Fake geek boy.
Wow.
Just rolled off the tongue. Randy's been waiting for it. He's gatekeeper.
All right, you dullard.
Fair. Okay, so...
Well, you know, actually, though, the fact that Nick remembered it is a testament to the pretty clever, iconic names for Pathfinder.
It's true.
I can't name any of the others.
Harsk is their dwarf ranger.
Yeah.
Look at the geek boy.
Yeah.
I'm a real geek boy.
It's because, Randy, you have both played more Pathfinder and you have read more of the comics.
I've read all the comics. The comics are great.
Yeah.
I really like it.
How do they compare versus Jim Zub stuff?
I like them a little better, to be honest.
You son of a bitch. Anyway. Well, maybe you can get some Pathfinder crossover with magic eventually.
No.
I feel like you guys should come out to this and beat Randy. Sign up quickly.
Yes.
And beat
come
Randy
out and beat
Dave.
Me savagely because I am not very good at magic.
Randy and Anna, not Dave. Dave doesn't play magic.
His ego needs to be checked.
Yes, definitely. Come on and teach me a lesson. The lesson will be... I'm bad at magic, which is a lesson I already have learned.
You stay online, Randy, with your little digital magic.
Right. That's right. Don't play paper magic. But, so that's Friday, July 16th. Looking forward to it. The set looks super awesome. Unfortunately, we have already heard that they're limiting. The card's going to be shorted just like Strixhaven. But we will have enough for the pre-release, at least. So that would be your best chance to make sure you get some of the cards, too.
Right on.
And then, of course, for Comic Book Day approacheth... August 14th, so we are about, I don't know, a month out, a little over a month out. So.
Why do you want to scare me like that, Randy?
Anyway, for Comic Book Day is coming.
Yeah. It looms in the distance.
Yes, it does. All right, news. Not a ton of news this week, but some interesting stuff. Good Omens is returning for a second season, which you might be saying, wait a minute, there's no second book of Good Omens. Or you might be, if you're on Twitter, you're definitely saying that in a meaner way. And I think Gaiman correctly was like, yeah, that's what I'm in the first one, and I wrote it. So, but I think because the show was so well received, because the two leads, David Tennant and Michael Sheen, loved playing the parts,
yeah,
that they decided to go back for more, which is probably a good thing for Prime and for all people who love this angel demon bromance thing.
Exactly. It seems like it's coming off better than the American Gods, which had like a bunch of issues when it,
yeah,
did it just get end?
It did
unresolved and stuff.
Man. And here's the other thing, like. There were cast issues, like Jillian, not Jillian Flynn, not Jillian Jacobs, Jillian Anderson.
Oh yeah,
left, yeah. And she was one of the best things about it. And yeah, it just feels like it was just like shedding problems. And also, Brian Fuller was the guy who was creating.
Did you say shedding problems?
No, it was shedding actors.
Oh, the shedding.
And though. I mixed things. Brian Fuller was the showrunner originally, and then he left to do Discovery, which he then did not stick with.
Right. Stick with a Project Fuller.
And I think that as a result, they had like two different showrunners.
I think I watched basically the first season of it. Yeah. Maybe some of the second season. It was pretty good. I liked it.
It's okay. I didn't love it.
I read the book. Good. I thought it was good.
Oh, Nick, here comes the intellectual. We got a badass up in here. Actually, I do think that is probably the best way to do it, probably because, A, you get an ending that other people won't.
Yep.
And you probably get, like, the best of it without getting kind of overextended, maybe, you know, dragging things out too long.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't know because I ain't read it.
Not me neither. I tried listening to the audiobook and I couldn't plug into it. Also, I've discovered, not as big a Neil Gaiman fan as I thought I was.
You're exactly as big a Neil Gaiman fan as I knew you were.
We'll see how Norse mythology lands for me when I try it.
I think it's going to land well.
We'll see. You think so? You know me and Gaiman's stuff.
I know. It's kind of, this one is a little different.
All right,
it's because he is like kind of like retelling old tales. I think he's retelling them in a really cool way.
Okay.
And that's why I think it's going to go for you. It's not as kind of like the same, because I have actually some of the same reticence about him sometimes too with his prose, where he's a little bit more of that sort of florid style, the writerly style, which I associate with people like Ray Bradbury and stuff like that, where there's just no mistaking that you are reading a writer's writing when you're reading it.
Okay.
And weirdly, it sounds more like he's like you're hanging out with Neil Gaiman around the campfire and he's telling you a really cool version of mythology stuff. And it's not as I don't know.
Okay, right.
It will be a little interesting to see what the second season of Good Omens, because it is just Neil Gaiman writing it, as opposed to the original book was co-written by Terry Pratchett,
right?
So, and I think Pratchett kind of amped up kind of the silliness and fun kind of things.
Hopefully they will not drop the ball.
I don't think they're going to.
If he has a second project go south, that would suck.
Yeah.
Was he still involved in American Gods towards the end, or did he himself leave?
I think Pratchett left the planet.
Well, no, not Pratchett. I'm talking about Gaiman with American Gods.
No, I think Gaiman was involved with American Gods.
Oh, okay.
It's real Gaiman, fools.
Is it Gaiman? Gaiman? Yeah. Whatever.
I say Gaiman.
Right, but it's Gaiman.
Is it for sure?
Mm?
Okay, all right.
I think I've heard him say it, and that's why it finally... Because I used to say both, too.
I mean, he doesn't know. He could be either.
Yeah, who would know? Him?
Anyway, whatever. Neil Gaiman has a new project coming out.
Yes, Neil Gaiman.
Neil Glimmerman.
Noel Glimmerman as American Gods. Anyway, changing tack a little bit. Star Wars Visions was announced. You guys see the trailer on this?
I didn't watch the trailer.
It was kind of neat. It was sort of less of a trailer and more of a behind the scenes in a way. So it's a series of what, like seven
there
anime
are seven
shorts?
Seven studios, nine shorts.
So this is the Animatrix for Star Wars.
It's the Animatrix for Star Wars.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, for the record, just in case people don't remember, the Animatrix was a little an anime anthology in a bunch of different styles tied into the Matrix, and it's super good.
Yeah, it is.
Like, it really holds up. They're a bunch of good stories. I don't know how the Star Wars one will be. I actually don't have any interest in it at all, but I will say this. I enjoyed watching the behind-the-scenes thing because there is zero doubt in my head that the animators involved are all into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they are doing everything from, like, there was one guy who said, like, it looked like he was doing, like, a little droid boy or something like that.
Yeah.
And then he was like, yeah, so of course we had to draw on the, you know, motifs of Astro Boy. And then there's, like, sort of more, you know, traditional, like, samurai stuff, but, like, it definitely has also got some more out there stuff, like stuff that where you're like, oh, this is based on this or this is based on that. It's their own thing.
Yeah, I mean, they're taking Star Wars stuff and filtering it through anime sensibility. So there's a robot thing that they mentioned specifically, like, yeah, we couldn't get away from Astro Boy.
Yep.
There's the samurai stuff, of course, is right there in all the Star Wars stuff.
Right. Yeah. The Vader and Obi-Wan and all that.
There's a few other things. So there are seven studios. Two of them are doing two anime. I've got the titles for all of them. There's The Duel, Lop and Ocho, which I believe Lop looks like a rabbit-style Jedi, which I wonder is going to be maybe a nod to the rabbit character in Star Wars, the comics.
Oh, weird.
The same race or something.
I did hear him. I remember that animator mentioning that and wanting to do like a... did he just say non-human design? I forget. But for sure, everybody should watch the trailer because it gives away almost nothing.
Yeah.
But you do get to like see some of the design work and you hear the animators talking about it. So
then there's Tatooine Rhapsody, which seems to be maybe a musical thing. The Twins, The Elder, The Village Bride, Akakiri, T-O-B-1, and The Ninth Jedi. Now, all these studios, I recognize Production I.G. because they did Ghost in the Shell.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know who Science Saru or Kinema Citrus or Studio Trigger or Studio Colorado or Gene Studio or Kamikaze Duga. I don't know any of these studios. I don't know anime that well at all.
I was going to say, I unfortunately do not know
So anime. I couldn't tell you who these animators are.
Just knowing that, like, this, can we say Lucasfilm, LucasArts? What do we call the thing now? Disney? Do we just say Disney?
It's just Disney.
Okay. But Disney don't cheap out. I know that these are not going to be some fly-by-night half-ass studios.
No.
They may not, you know, it's possible they may go a little bit off the beaten path, but I suspect they'll be going with people who are, like, pretty high on the talent level.
Right.
So, anyway, I don't have an interest in, like, Star Wars anime just doesn't really interest me beyond, like, maybe watching a few seconds of a short or something.
I'll watch shorts when they do one a week, and it's going to be starting in late September. I'll probably watch it. It's on Disney Plus.
You know, I didn't have any expectations of the Animatrix, and then I ended up really liking it. Yeah. So if you were to tell me it's pretty good, Dave, I'd probably watch it.
You're not watching Bad Batch, right?
No.
Nick, are you watching Bad Batch?
I watched the first like movie, and then I'm waiting for them all to just kind of build up, and I'm just going to power through.
It's super good. Yeah, I've heard. I actually think it's on a level with Rebels and Clone Wars at its best. Like, it's really... They're definitely sort of filling in gaps of story.
That's not shocking.
It's basically A-Team in the Star Wars universe. Yeah. In the post Order 66 universe, so...
Well, the opening movie was great.
Yeah. So. Opening movie.
I mean, it was basically...
You mean the long episodes?
Yeah. The first episode was, like, two episodes together, so...
Yeah. No, it's been really good. I'm super digging it.
Cool.
Last bit, and this is just in development, but I thought it might be fun to discuss. One of y'all posted this in our news thing. Fast and Furious is developing a Cypher spinoff.
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
Right. Quick reminder to people who do not know the franchise, Cypher is the bad guy.
The evil hacker played by...
Charlize Theron.
Charlize Theron.
Yeah, A-lister Charlize Theron. Kind of chewing scenery, doing her... She was in a Hannibal Lecter-ish role in the last movie.
Yep.
That is to say, other bad guys were holding on to her and had her in, like, a glass cage.
Yes, they were stuck in a glass cage. Not a glass cage of emotion, but an actual glass cage.
A literal glass cage. And forcing her to assist them. But she's a pretty fun bad guy. I don't know quite where they go with it. She is, it'd be their first one to focus, on a villain?
Yeah.
She is not a... drivery person.
Nope.
Can I suggest something?
Yes. Yeah.
She builds her family. She has seen the error of her ways and the fact that she has always looked down upon Dom's family. She must build a family.
But can she
own.
Be like, but they'll be villainous?
They'll be villainous.
She'll build the anti-family.
Yeah, the anti-family.
Oh my god. Such a power cannot be stopped when you have both loyalty and villainy.
Yep.
Yeah. It's going to be pretty great.
But this does bring up an idea, of course, of like, who else will they spin off? Because... Fast 9 apparently is making a ton of money.
Yeah, it's making bank.
To be honest, if they did like Tej
and Ramsey's and Roman,
Ramsey, like any of those like kind of supporting players, I would watch a movie with them.
I think the three of them doing their troubleshooting thing, like the tech troubleshooting.
So right now we know they're doing the female Fast and the Furious.
What?
Yeah, it's like an all-female. It's going to have, like...
Femme and the Furious?
It's going to be Michelle Rodriguez and a bunch of the others.
Oh, really?
On their own.
Is that where Giselle's coming back?
Who knows? Hobbs and Shaw 2 is definitely already filming.
Nice.
And then Fast 10, which is two-parter finale.
Yep.
And now the Cypher show, so... Yep.
Randy, you said Giselle. You didn't mean Cardi B, did you?
No, I don't mean Cardi B. I mean
Giselle Gal Gadot.
Giselle is Gal Gadot's character.
Oh, right.
That's what she'll bring. We'll bring her back. Han, you could totally spin off Han.
I feel like you could do a Mr. Nobody show.
Yeah.
Mr. Well, Nobody Han was working with Mr. Nobody. So yeah. He's a regular with them all.
Yep.
A reminder: if you don't know who Mr. Nobody is, it's Kurt Russell and basically the Nick Fury role. He is the could easily become the spine of any subsequent stuff they want to do.
Who else am I missing? Who else have they not spun off? Would that be everybody?
There's Mr. Nobody's kid, depending on what he does. That is to say, that is what Clint Eastwood's son.
Yeah, but he's not his kid. He's like his
protege.
Yeah, it's not his kid. They called him Baby Nobody, but that's not actually his kid.
Right. But I meant he. But he is the son of Clint Eastwood.
Right? I'm going to get crazy here.
Yeah.
Let's do a spinoff of Hector. from he was from the first Fast and the Furious, but he's shown up periodically. He's like
I don't even know who that
he's
is.
He's like the head of the street racing. He's the one who like organizes everything.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, you know, if we're as long as we're getting crazy, Cuban Mile.
Oh yeah,
whoever Cuban that guy Mile, is.
Yeah.
He's an honorable but kind of skeevy, shifty dude, a street racer from the mean streets of Cuba. I'd be down for that.
The Brazilian Demolition Brothers?
Yeah, I always like to see them. And one more. Young Dom and stuff.
You can't tell me they're not already planning that. They had to have...
I assume that it felt like it was like a stealth setup to do past adventures.
Yeah.
Also,
I mean, we now know John Cena became a super spy, so there's all kinds of stuff you could do with him.
Yep. So, with the...
He seems more, like, appropriate for to come into the Hobbs and Shaw.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like if you drag him, because he's more of the spy guy.
If you did Young Dom, what technically... I know that it's probably a little bendable, but would it be the 90s or the early 2000s?
I think the 90s.
Yeah.
Well,
I think like they could have 90s. Some fun by, like... making them kind of overtly period pieces and leaning into the look and style.
Because
it has to
be early 90s, because that's when he gets out of prison. And by 99, which is where the first one takes place, he was like king of the street racing.
Right, so it has to be in the early 90s, yeah.
Yep. Suffice to say, these dopey-ass movies actually do have a lot of possibilities for spin-offs.
They may outlast the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't know if they'll make more money.
That'd be
sure
tough.
Either, but
it'll be close.
Right now, there's a bunch of there's a meme out there. There's tons of ridiculous memes about the overuse of family as a motif in there.
Yes, there is.
You killed me with the Invincible one. That was my favorite.
My favorite one that I just saw now. I haven't reposted it yet, but it's Dom standing there, and I don't remember. I think it's Mr. Nobody off to the side. He's got a bunch of Campbell's soup in front of him.
Uh huh.
And someone's like, "What's with all the soup?" And that's the meme. And I'm like, that's pretty good. I like a two-layer meme.
Oh, that's pretty nice. Yeah, I like the ones that are a little slightly deeper cuts on those. There was one I saw where they were all having their prayer in the Olive Garden, of course.
Yes.
Yeah. anyway. Ridiculous movies.
Yes.
I think, by the way, it is time, though, for me to go ahead and watch the early ones.
Yes, it is. It's time, Dave.
I sort of enjoyed coming in on the fifth one and letting that just be my one and only introduction because it reminded me of the way I like got into comics, where, you know, like my first Avengers comic was like Avengers 213 or something like that.
Right.
And I just kind of kept reading from there. But periodically, I'd go back and reread some old reprints of the classic stuff. And since this is much easier to find than old Stan Lee comics, I might as well watch actual Fast and Furious movies.
Yep, it's time. And then we should talk about it on the podcast.
Yep.
You should tell us when you're doing it so I can rewatch too.
The Fastidious and the Furious.
Yes. all right. That's it for news. We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, July 7th, and it's a first week, which means there's a ton of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Lots of new number ones, there's a new X-Men book, there's all kinds of stuff.
So Nick, talk to me about this new X-Men book.
Okay.
It's a big double-sided one, or double-sized.
Yes, not double-sided, but double-sized.
Yes, you can flip it over.
I am actually behind, but I decided to jump ahead and read this. Yes, a new X-Men team is formed, headed by Jean Grey and Cyclops.
I'm going to slightly backtrack you, because you told me something that I didn't really know.
Okay.
That during the last couple years, as Hickman's had his agenda going on, he's been the big overmind at all the X-Men books, that the X-Men have not really formally been a team in that time.
Sort of teams, like X-Force is kind of a black ops team, but
I mean the X-Men.
Right, the X-Men has not existed.
As a concept, there was an X-Men comic, but you were saying it's almost more of like the catch-all where he would do all the stories he kind of wanted to about like what's going on Krakoa, but did not like have them going around as a set team adventuring.
Correct.
And this seems to get back to that.
That is true. There's even a backup piece, newspaper piece written by Ben Urich that kind of touches on that kind of stuff, which I thought was actually really cool.
I always like when they kind of do a little bit of the shared universe and that, you know, I think people know who Ben Urich is, but he's the big reporter from Spider-Man and Daredevil. But I guess he was he created by in Daredevil comics?
I think so.
Yeah, I think Frank Miller
created. But now he's like, he heads the Daily Bugle. He's not just a reporter anymore. He is
right,
like
he's like co-owner.
Yeah,
and,
co-owner.
Yeah. But, he actually has, unlike J. Jonah Jameson, he actually has principles.
Yes.
He was always, the big thing was always, he knew who Daredevil was, and he always sat on that story, the biggest story of them all.
Yeah, so this is actually written by Jerry Duggan. It's still overseen, like, Hickman is still involved, but this is Jerry Duggan's story. And I like Jerry Duggan a lot because he sort of plays around in the Marvel Universe and, like, uses that as a playground, as a, and people start showing up like this. There's a couple of cameos in here that I was happy to see.
It's definitely an X-Men book, but it's they, well, as befits the way the mutants have kind of stepped out into a larger role in the Marvel universe. There are other play, yeah, other some other big wigs show up.
Yeah, and this one is just about a giant creature attacking New York.
But a mysterious creature.
A mysterious creature. And the X-Men are on scene first amongst all the heroes. And the new team is actually kind of fun. It's got some old school people, new school people.
I think we can say who it is, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's Cyclops and Marvel Girl. Sunfire sporting a new costume that is sort of akin to his Age of Apocalypse look, but a little bit different. Rogue and Polaris.
Who's this guy?
Which guy?
That guy.
Oh, that is Sync.
What's his power?
I forget.
It's a sort of a like Rogues. He can sync up with someone else and gain their powers.
Okay. And then also X-23 or Wolverine.
Yeah,
I actually
Wolverine.
Didn't catch what she's going by.
She is
but
Wolverine.
It is Laura whatever.
Yep.
Laura Kinney.
Laura Palmer from Twin
Peaks.
Laura
Kinney.
Isn't that Laura Kinney?
No, it is.
It's it? Oh,
I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought that was Rogue's name.
All right, I was thinking that would sound like an actress's name.
You were thinking of Laura Linney.
Yes.
That's true. You were thinking of Wolverine. Who is not Wolverine?
Are we sure about that?
I mean, not 100%.
But the kind of interesting thing happened. I haven't read all of this, but they sort of have to get innovative with how they what they do with their power. They do something I feel it's pretty safe to say the X-Men have never done in order to deal with. The
but this is utilizing their abilities together, which I think is. I was talking about it with Anna, and Anna kind of pointed this out that it was nice for them to see their using being a team and using their powers together, which I thought is a very cool idea.
There's also a subplot. Can we say what happened in Planet Size X-Men? I think we can at this point. There's a subplot dealing with the claiming of Mars for mutants.
Yes, they've claimed basically the Krakoa has claimed Mars as a habitable space and turned it into a Rocco, which is sort of like a. Now is a planet for mutants.
Right. A-R-R-A-K-O?
Yes. Which is the other world where Apocalypse's minions and like that.
That's
kind of, those races have been kind of shunted to, so I guess now they have a planet to live on.
Okay.
Not everyone's happy with that, but...
Right, and in fact, there may be problems trickling down from it. One of the things that I can kind of enjoy from afar, even though I'm not like plugging into these comics, is how... things that were, you know, they all sort of like proceed from what came before, and there's a very coherent vision.
Yeah.
So when something big happens, it's going to have reverberations throughout all the books, kind of a, it's going to start some dominoes tipping, and you're going to see the effects happening kind of in pretty smart ways.
Yeah. And this has got phenomenal art by Pepe Larraz, who actually was one of the artists. Actually, I think he did
House of X or Powers of X. Okay.
One of them. So there's that kind of cohesiveness as well. Also, there's a new treehouse in New York that I think is really, really cool.
Yeah, yeah. Which is to say a major new extension of Krakoa right in the middle of the Big Apple.
Yep.
And a full article from Ben Urich on what he thinks of it.
Yeah.
Because he straight up talks to Cyclops and like kind of briefly interviews him.
I also like seeing Cyclops smile. I actually like these people actually having
some range of emotion. He seems a little bit more chill right at the moment.
Yeah. So
Cyclops, of course, has discovered weed.
The cool thing about this is also, yes, it'd be great to read everything that's come before, read all of Hickman's, read House of X, Powers of X, all the different team books, but you can jump in with this.
It's true.
It is very user-friendly.
I've read most of the issue, and I'm not following those, and I found it very approachable. You aren't going to have any issues.
So I think if you've wanted to jump in on the X-Men but have felt a little bit kind of...
Intimidated
by all the books... This is the book you're going to want to jump in with.
Did either of y'all read Masters of the Universe Revelation?
I did.
Okay. What did you think?
It's solid. I'm actually weirdly excited for the cartoon. Some of the dialogue in here was a little, for me, a little off, but overall I thought it was fun.
This is by the showrunners. It's Kevin Smith and Rob David's story.
Yeah.
Tim Sheridan is the scripter. Tim Sheridan is the guy doing Titans Academy right now.
Oh, interesting. I'd forgotten that.
Yeah.
I like the character designs a lot. I mean, it feels very classic, but then kind of updating a bit. There's also some cool ideas with maybe people who have had the power of Grayskull before He-Man.
Yeah, they show us a king. It's not King Randor.
I saw a person of color wielding the sword.
Yeah, which I think is really interesting and neat. There's kind of a Cthulhuan monster involved in this.
Orko is very Orko. That's what I thought that he was probably going to be like a more serious Orko. But it seems like the driving philosophy for Kevin Smith was, you know, kind of keep as much as we can.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, let's make Orko into like a mad wizard who, you know, kills people or whatever with his experiments. He's still Orko-ish, but he's probably, I suspect he's not as goofy.
He's less goofy, yeah.
I think if you like He-Man before, this is gonna scratch the itch. Probably in better ways than anything previously.
Well, the animation looked super good and stuff like that. And so, yeah, I figure anybody who's like kind of hyped for the series should probably check out the comic, which includes a variant cover by Mike Mignola himself.
Yeah.
Isn't this cover...
Stefan Sedgwick.
Yeah, Stefan Sedgwick.
Oh, yep. Okay. Justice League Infinity comes out, which is Jan DeMatteis writing a basically sort of continuation of the Justice League Unlimited.
Yeah, this is a weirdly not timely but still cool thing. Justice League Unlimited ran what? Or mid 2000s, early 2000s to mid 2000s
is probably one of the best Justice League animations we've ever gotten.
Yeah, absolutely.
If not the best.
Yeah, I'd say it's probably the best. That's like this is the one that had What do you call it? Green Lantern and Hawk Girl in a relationship that, you know, proceeded, you know, kicked off with the previous Justice League cartoon and the Thanagarian invasion. Does it have Randy, like, the Watchtower and all the different characters?
So, interesting. This seems to be a little more heavily based on the Justice League prior to Unlimited.
Okay.
Because it is, as I showed, his team is the, like, Martian Manhunter, Jon Stewart, Hawk Girl... This seems to be more based on
More just like... What's it actually called again?
It's called Justice League Infinity.
Infinity.
But they have a scene with a bunch of the characters. Although I noticed that it's his, like, Justice League Unlimited characters. It's Fire and Ice and Red Tornado and Blue and Gold. And so it may be him just doing his own riff. But it does seem a little more informed by the early stuff, although Hawkgirl's in her later costume.
Although it does open up with... Amazo doing his like trek across the universe, which was a
It feels like mostly it feels like the earlier Justice League stuff, the Infinity stuff is in there, but it seems like it's more aimed at those who enjoyed the early parts because it's the classic team. It's Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Martian Manhunter, Flash, Hawkgirl, and Green Lantern.
Yeah, and that's John Stewart.
If you're Jones for more of that animated universe, it is rolling here.
Yeah,
it features Granny Goodness and Calibak.
I have a question, Nick. You said Amazo took some trip across the universe. What was the plot there?
He basically, Luther kind of...
he evolved into something, yeah. He evolved into like this crazy...
And then he was coming back to Earth after Luther.
To kill Luther, yeah.
Okay.
Because he had wronged him.
Yeah.
Luther, you jerk.
Extreme Carnage starts this week. It is a Carnage fan. However... Carnage is getting a movie this summer.
This was very different from what I think we would have expected it to be.
And yeah,
this was not a blood and guts extreme book, despite the name.
In the same way that Venom did some interesting stuff, Flash Thompson, a.k.a. new anti-Venom, is the lead here. And basically it seems like Carnage has sort of become almost more viral and much more dangerous And there's a bit of a, like, a little bit of serial killer vibe to it. I mean, he was a serial killer, but
right.
like a little bit creepy here.
There's kind of a neat bit where you see a fish in the ocean, just like a normal little fish, get come into contact with the tendrils from the Carnage symbiote. And, like, actually, it looks really cool in its Carnage form.
Yeah.
And then it transfers from that to a shark, and then, like, you're like, oh, shit, shit's going down.
It's also, it's focusing on a new politician who, after the symbiote attack of King in Black, he is pushing a big anti-alien agenda, and he is refocusing the Friends of Humanity, which was the anti-mutant organization.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I didn't catch, I read a little bit of this one, but I did not catch that was the same organization.
So, like, they're doing a thing where the senator is basically rabble-rousing and trying to use anti-alien agenda to move himself forward, and there's a question of why he's doing it.
You know, this isn't one of those things where once upon a time I might have been like, it's a little heavy-handed or whatever. But no, it's exactly like reality. Yep.
Anyway, not what I was expecting. It's Flash Thompson. It's almost, I hesitate to say this because it sounds loftier than it is, but it's almost got like a 3 Days of the Condor kind of vibe of like
yeah, that political thriller suspense.
What's the one with the brain? Oh, the Manchurian Candidate.
Yeah, that
kind of thing.
Okay.
So
it is actually more ambitious and kind of character centric than you would have thought for something like that.
Also, Flash has an old like military homeless buddy who looks like he may hook up with a symbiote to help him out. So he may be building his own team of symbiotes. Which
that's
kind of
neat.
So yeah, we'll see what happens. Image's new book called Ordinary Gods. It's by Kyle Higgins, who is writing Radiant Black, which I really like. It's art by Felipe Watanabe, and it is a sort of, it takes place on Earth, but it's about this sort of weird otherworldly thing, these gods that all were divided into 13 territories that are represented by cunning, strength, love, sorrow, and they're the gods of that particular.
So it's a new pantheon idea. In the way that the Endless were when Gaiman right. did them. I know it's not like that, but.
And there is there's a rebellion that happened, and somehow these gods wound up on Earth trapped in mortal forms, and there's almost like a conspiracy to get them back. It takes a while to get into it's what exactly is going on.
Yeah.
But it's a good setup, and I'm really curious to see where he goes from here. Also, the cover features, Queen Victoria, I think.
Stalin.
Abraham Lincoln. It is clear that maybe these sort of gods
larger than life people,
as larger than life humans throughout the ages.
Yeah, I was looking at it a little while ago, and I had only looked at a thumbnail of it online, and I was just like, oh, there's like a Victorian woman, and there's like a samurai guy, but I'm like, oh, these might actually be very specific people, most of them.
Yep. Yeah, I'll be curious to see where it goes from here. It's a good first issue. Image has Skybound X, which is their weekly book. It originally was supposed to be launched last year, the 10th anniversary of Skybound during the San Diego Comic Con. Then there was this whole pandemic thing.
Skybound is like Robert Kirkman's sub-imprint of Image, right?
Yeah, yes. So the big thing is serialized across... Oh, this is an anthology book. It's going to be weekly. Serialized across it, there's a Rick Grimes 2000 story, which is basically the what-if-that-alien-invasion idea he pitched for Walking Dead was actually the case.
Yep.
And it's like a weird superhero alien thing.
It's like big, larger-than-life sort of sci-fi.
Yep. There's also a Clementine story, which I believe is a lead-in to a Clementine graphic novel that's coming in 2022. If you don't know Clementine, she is the lead character in the Walking Dead video game that was such a big hit. It's going to come out as a series of graphic novels, middle-grade graphic novels, because she's like a teenager in this Walking Dead world. And
wait, they're actually going to publish him like essentially as YA?
Yep, this is basically a taster.
Oh, that's...
And it's,
God, that's a pretty clever way to expand the franchise, which felt like it was faltering to me and was like maybe just going to kind of wrap up. But the idea of kind of doing a little YA zombie action stuff, that's kind of neat, actually.
And it's written and drawn by Tilly Walden, who's a cartoonist and illustrator from Austin.
Oh.
She's created a couple Eisner Award-winning graphic novels, Spinning and Are You Listening, both of which we have and sell quite a bit. She's a teacher in Vermont now, but she is an Austinite originally. But yeah, it's very different kind of Walking Dead. And then in the midst, we've got a Ultra Mega story and a Manifest Destiny story, which are two of the other books that Skybound does. So the anthology is going to be basically a Walking Dead, Rick Grimes 2000 centered, and then I believe a bunch of new stories throughout.
That's pretty cool, actually. I tell you, knowing that about the YA books, I've never played the Walking Dead video game, but that actually makes me want to at least read that chapter of it.
Yeah.
Pretty clever.
Aftershock is a new book called Clans of Benari, which is a sci-fi book.
Clans of, what is it?
Bellari.
Bellari. Is that supposed to mean something to me?
No.
Okay. It's like spacey stuff.
It's the Bellari system.
Oh.
And it opens with the rules that no person or clan may access the system, no person or clan may do the designated work for another clan, and clans may not merge.
And if you fail to do one of these, you get outcasted.
And it seems to be sort of this guy breaks the rules, and he adopts a kid, and then the two of them have adventures.
Yep. Okay.
It's another weird sci-fi one from Aftershock. Aftershock is doing a lot of different stuff.
Yeah. Man, the art's super good in this.
It is. It is. Boom has another Boom Box, which is their all-ages books, called Mamo, M-A-M-O, which...
Gorgeous artwork.
Really pretty. And it's about a girl who is the witch of an area, and this girl goes to her for help, so... A little bit like The Last Witch and some of their magic ones.
That's also very Kiki's Delivery Service.
Yeah.
I need to read this one. The art is pretty incredible in it.
It is super pretty. Yeah. Batman Secret Files of Signal. This is, what's the guy's name, Nick? Do you remember?
Duke something.
Yeah, Duke. Yeah.
Not Ellington, but no. Duke.
And he has the notion that he's the Batman who operates in the daytime.
Yeah. He's like the Gotham's like daylight protector.
And it's his new thing. Again, really nice art. More of this character. I believe it's a little miniseries. Also want to mention, Nice House on the Lake, second issue comes out. We all love the first issue. I thought the second issue was really good, too.
Yes.
And G.I. Joe Yearbook number 2. This is a reprint. But it's a reprint of some of the best G.I. Joe stuff. It's Larry Hama, Michael Golden actually doing interior art, which he didn't do. The October Guard, which is the Russian counterparts.
And an extended, like a running chase to get like a piece of like a, I think a downed satellite or something like that.
Yeah.
That it's ends up on a train, and there's like this running battle on the train with the October Guard holding the train and Cobra attack copters, like essentially mounting a vehicle, like an aerial assault on it. Very kind of Mad Max in that sense, like the big convoy fight at the end of Road Warrior. So I always dig that kind of stuff. And yes, Michael Golden drawn stuff.
I forgot about Fight Girls.
Yeah, this one's from that's from Straczynski's line of comics, but it's a miniseries from Frank Cho, which honestly maybe looks somewhat less ambitious than some of the Straczynski stuff, and more of an opportunity to Frank Cho to draw and indulge in his favorite pastimes, which is beautiful women and in this case dinosaurs.
Oh, there are dinosaurs. Okay.
Yes. All right. There's lots of dinosaurs, in fact. And
I see saber-toothed tigers, dinosaurs, raptors.
And his dinosaur stuff is really good. It reminds me of the art from William Stout.
Oh, yeah.
And also, honestly, the guy who did Age of Reptiles, something Delgado, who was the Deep Space Nine station designer.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was his claim to fame. He was comics was something he dabbled in. I don't know what the premise is here. It looks like there's women who might be part of some sort of extreme sports contest or something like that are, like, in South America. And I don't know if the dinosaurs in it are part of the contest or if they're like, we're in the middle of an extreme sports contest and we found, Hidden Valley of Dinosaurs.
Right.
One of those things or something happens, I'll give it a read. It's I'm going to say it's Frank Cho's Hunger Games.
All right. Also, I see WWE The New Day, which I don't think any of us are wrestling fans in general, especially not modern wrestling. But these guys, I guess Anna said that they have a reputation for being kind of fun. And it is written by Evan Narcisse, who is a Austin writer who had done some Black Panther stuff.
Well, the fun part, as I'm looking at the cover... It's them looking kind of very intentionally goofy, I think. They're all covered, they have stacked on each one of them or holding them little plastic unicorns, one of which is playing a trombone.
Oh, sure.
So they seem to have embraced some absurdity, and I can appreciate a little bit of silliness in the kind of hyper dramatic world of wrestling.
Right.
Randy, did you mention the Avengers thing?
Yeah.
Going on in issue 46 of Avengers, they start a storyline that I don't know if this is just in Avengers or if it's expanding
it's
elsewhere.
It's just in Avengers, I believe.
Okay, that is called World War She-Hulk. And I don't know why, but She-Hulk is, like, dangerous and sort of rampagey in the same way Hulk was, like, 15 years ago or so when they did World War Hulk.
Right.
I'm quite sure that they have their own weird thing going on, and it's not the same deal as his. But they're setting the stage for her to be, like, primary antagonist, I think, or at least trying to save her is going to be, like, take over the storyline.
Yeah. Batman 110, Batman continues to be really good. Immortal Hulk 48, which I believe is 2 issues from the end.
Yep.
Second issue of Conjuring the Lover, 3rd issue of Good Asian. Nick, anything else on your stack?
Second issue of Colin Bunn's Basilisk, which I actually think continues to get better and better. X-Books, of course, Children of the Atom, Hellions, and X-Force.
They all spinning off the Gala stuff? Or they...
Yeah, they are. Although there's like a Sinister battling himself. I'm kind of behind, so I haven't read them yet. There's a second issue of Crush and Lobo, with Crush traveling through space, lamenting on her the fight that she had with her girlfriend and possible breakup. The second issue of Joelle Jones' Wonder Girl, which I'm really enjoying, sort of all the different Amazons converging upon her, because the new Wonder Girl, Yara Flor, there's something inside her that is causing ripples that are possibly destroying the world. And then the fifth issue of probably my favorite series of this year, which is Nocterra. I'm just loving this book. Scott Snyder and Tony Daniel have created a world that is just really, really interesting.
It's like, what would you call it, a slightly supernatural post-apocalypse?
Yeah, but like...
The world of night.
Right, the twists and turns they're taking with every issue I find very entertaining, and I just think it's really well written.
There's Fair enough. Also a new Cyberpunk original graphic novel.
Oh, that's an OGN.
Yeah. There's a great picture, I'll just read off the back. During a routine shift, a lonely maintenance worker encounters an altercation between a mysterious woman and the Maelstrom gang. As the woman attempts to escape, she hands him a chip. To find her and uncover the data, he sets off on a wild journey through the city's seedy mecca and dangerous wastelands, where he meets a sly new client, crazy cyberpunks, and the infamous Johnny Silverhand. He'll finally discover what true love is, and while it'll never be possible, not in a place like Night City. It's sort of a neo-noir. Also art by Daniel Gels' Zelge, who I always really enjoy. I was not a fan early on, but I've come to enjoy his weird style. And then the trade paperback for Miskatonic, which was the 1920s... not, I guess, sort of noir, historical crime fiction and Lovecraftian horror.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one was, the single issues kind of took off for us, and I think that it revealed that, once again, that sort of hunger for more Lovecraftian comics, which, although there's like little Lovecraftian monsters that show up in Avengers and everywhere else,
yep.
It's pretty rare that they do a straight-up Lovecrafty comic, and so we saw the single issues very regularly selling out on this. So, yeah, if that's something that holds an interest for you, might just want to pick up the trade.
All right. I think that's all we have for this week. We've got a bunch of movies that some of us have watched, but the others haven't watched, so at some point we'll cover those.
Yeah, we're going to try and get around to those in the next week or two.
Yep. But until next time,
Yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.